on the Kovish against Ashcroft. Ms. Fasciani.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm appearing on behalf of the Palinkovich family, who have been before this Court once before and are back again, this time with respect to a well-documented motion to reopen to have the Board of Immigration Appeals remand the case to the immigration judge to consider back in April and September of 1998 and 1999 their change of circumstances that occurred with respect to the ongoing and horrendous conflict in the Balkans. The family are of Albanian ethnicity. They are citizens of Montenegro. And this time, they contended that both the father and the son, who is now of military age, and were fearing persecution at the time when the Serbian military was waging its military campaign in Kosovo. And we all know what happened in Kosovo. The evidence that was submitted was quite substantial. In fact, it was quite different than the evidence that this Court had considered in the first case. One of the major distinctions was the fact that there was a report from NATO dated April of 1999 that showed that there was a military call-up of eligible males from the ages of 16 to 60, and that that NATO was attempting to discourage Albanians and Serbians from obeying these call-up orders. That was a significant difference than in proof that there was, in fact, a continuing call-up, a continuing interest in the citizens of the former Republic of Yugoslavia by the federal government. The other significant difference is that the principal alien and his son attempted to get their passports extended, and were told that they needed military clearances, and so they asked a relative to go and get them a military clearance, and what ultimately resulted was that the father was ordered to appear for reactivation on October 28th of 1998, and the motion to reopen was submitted in September of the same year. There's also further evidence that there was a growing tension between the government of Montenegro and the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, which at the time was headed by the wonderful humanitarian Mr. Milosevic, and that the federal government had stationed 10,000 federal troops. I wish to outline to this Court that the conscription is the duty of the federal government and not of the state of Montenegro, which is part of the former Yugoslavia. The 6 months after the motion to reopen was filed, NATO began bombing Montenegro and Serbia. The board denied the motion to reopen, finding that there was not a sufficient change in circumstances that affected their asylum claim, because this was merely an escalation. Now, what they meant by an escalation was never explained. The respondents contend that this escalation was the civil conflict between the federal government of Serbia and the Montenegrin government, but really it was quite a different scenario if you take a look at the entire picture and not the tiny characters that were involved in their bitter political dispute.
What are we to make of the change, the continuing change there? It's not obviously now the same as it was when this matter was before the BIA?
Well, it reminds me of a broken leg that's held together by steel pins. Without the United Nations peacekeeping mission, both in Sarajevo and in Kosovo, you would have another absolutely genocidal conflagration, regardless of the fact that Milosevic is gone. The fact that you cut the head from an octopus doesn't mean that you've also severed the legs. And this octopus is still very much alive.
But there's no Yugoslav army.
Oh, of course there is. There certainly is. They have not abandoned their Yugoslav army. They're just not doing what they were doing before. That's something that is very clear. NATO may have...
Well, it sounds like the change is things have gotten better rather than worse.
Well, if things...
It's not a ground for reopening.
If things have gotten better than worse, we judge that by the perspective of 1998. We don't judge it by today's conditions. And second of all...
Gotten better by 1998.
No, it wasn't, because in 1999, they started the 1998, they began preparations in March of 1998, the Serbian military invaded Kosovo, and there began the genocide. And then a year later, NATO got involved. Peacekeeping mission is still very much involved in Kosovo.
Well, when I said there's no Yugoslav army, there is no Yugoslavia.
The former, well, in a real sense, it's the former government of Yugoslavia that we're referring to.
He was a member of the Yugoslav army. It doesn't exist anymore. Their individual states may now have their own armies, but not Yugoslavia.
Insofar as Montenegro,
right,
and insofar as Serbia is concerned, perhaps maybe we're talking about titles here. Montenegro does not has never had its own army.
Right.
But the former government of the former Republic of Yugoslavia always had its own army and still does today.
What is it called? What is the country called that has support that
you
army?
Can variously call it. You can call it the Yugoslav army. You can call it the Serbian army, which has probably been referred to in our materials as the Serbian army.
No, it's referred to as the Yugoslav
army. Or the Yugoslav army or the whatever. But it's still there. I mean, it hasn't disappeared. And in fact, at the time of when the motion to reopen was filed.
Well, tell me this. I'm asking this for your expertise in this. Does Yugoslavia still exist?
Yes, it does. We don't recognize it.
As a state?
As a republic. As a republic.
And what is it made up of?
Montenegro and Serbia. And Kosovo is supposedly part of that, but that's under UN supervision. But it's always been... Montenegro has always been considered a part of Serbia. It never seceded, although it tried. It never formally seceded. And it is known now in the parlance of the State Department as the FMR, which is a former Republic of Yugoslavia. What they call themselves in Yugoslav, I certainly don't know. But it's always been considered the two together. And then you have independent Macedonia, you have independent Croatia. Those are formally independent countries where Serbia lost the war on that. But Montenegro and Serbia have always been conjoined politically and interdependent economically. The federal government of the Republic, Montenegro and Serbia, controls the paramilitary police, controls the army, controls the federal police in these various locales, and basically that is the structure that even persists as of this present time. I don't believe that the situation has changed any. It has simply been burbling on the surface. I think that this family would in fact experience persecution. There was an amnesty for draft evaders that only went up to 1995. Everybody after 1995 is subject to imprisonment, is subject to a trial. Mr. Rosario has had numerous summonses, one of which was presented in this record. There was the existence of a call-up. If there isn't a call-up today, that's beside the point almost, because he still is guilty of not appearing when summoned by the federal government. The respondents have indicated the CAT claim was also submitted. That was timely. The board said that it was not... they hadn't established a prima facie case. We contend that that is erroneous because it's conjoined to the board's finding on the asylum claim that they haven't established that ethnic Albanians were being persecuted. So if there's no torture, no proof of ethnic Albanians being persecuted, then there is no proof of the torture convention. And I also believe that that is a rather serious error. The respondent contends that this case has been pending too long and therefore should be disposed of, there should be closure, and I suggest to this court that that's a rather cynical and harsh and arbitrary attitude. If there is, in fact, as this court has recognized in two significant cases, Luzic versus INS and Bezgatovsky, that there were at the time that these cases were decided in 2000, 2001, the court took judicial notice of the fact that Albanians were persecuted as a group ethnically, and that the government and that service in the Yugoslav army was in itself persecution for ethnic Albanians. And I would ask that the court reverse the board's decision. I believe my time is expiring. I have reserved time in rebuttal. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Fashadi. Ms. Dowd.
May it please the Court, Jamie Dowd on behalf of the respondent, John Ashcroft. This is the petitioner's, as petitioner's counsel pointed out, second time before this court. The respondent contends that this is the same claim that they brought before this court before and that was rejected in the initial petition for review. They failed to establish in their motion to reopen that they were now eligible for asylum, withholding, or CAT relief based on a changed country conditions in Montenegro. The board was correct in finding that they failed to do so, and this court should uphold that decision and deny the petition for review. I'd like to point out, one, the conscription claim is the same. The board correctly pointed out that required military service is not persecution under the statute that would not entitle these petitioners to eligibility for asylum or withholding of deportation. Number two, the petitioners cite numerous changes in the government of Montenegro, the removal of certain leaders and replacement with other people, etc. But they don't point out how this goes beyond some sort of civil strife or, as this court has pointed out, a fear of general conditions of ethnic persecution common to all members of an ethnic minority, which does not, again, constitute eligibility for asylum. That case is Petrovic v. INS. This court has also decided many cases similar to this one and found that a general pattern is not enough. Particularly, this court has looked at the former Yugoslavia, the Balkans, that area, and has found that the political situation there in terms of the fighting between the different areas of the former Yugoslavia does not constitute asylum in general or conditions for asylum in general for any one person. And to show eligibility for asylum, that one person has to show that he or she qualifies as a refugee under INA Section 101A43, that they meet the definition. It's not enough to just say, well, there's a lot of civil upheaval in our country, therefore we're eligible. They have to show how they, in particular, are eligible. And the first time they came before this court, they had a conscription claim, which the court found was not enough and upheld the board's decision. And they went back to the board on that same conscription claim, and the board denied it once again. I want to stress that this is an abuse of discretion standard of review. So even if this court might see that differently in terms of fact-finding, et cetera, the proper standard is whether the board abuses discretion in denying the motion to reopen. The court also correctly points out that conditions were better by 1998. If you look at the State Department report in the record at 316 to 328, the 1995 report, and then you look at even the evidence submitted by the petitioners in their motion to reopen, it's not clear exactly what changed circumstances they're necessarily referring to beyond, I guess, the conscription argument that they're making to show how country conditions were worse. But they have to make two showings: one, that country conditions were worse or that they were changed, and two, that change in circumstances makes them now prima facie eligible for asylum or withholding of deportation. I also want to address the CAT claim. The motion to reopen, if you look in the record, pages 15 through 17, the CAT motion to reopen makes no argument whatsoever regarding torture. And I believe Petitioner's Counsel argued, and I believe they may have argued in their reply brief, that the board lumped the two together and therefore really made no finding as to torture because they said, well, you're not eligible for asylum, therefore you're not eligible for torture. That's incorrect. That's not what the board said. The board said, we will deny the respondent's request that we reopen for torture. There's nothing in their motion or attached evidence which
I'm not sure what you mean, eligible for torture. Maybe one would assume that the administrative process conducted by the board is a form of torture. But I don't think they applied for torture.
I apologize. I mean protection under the Convention Against Torture. I apologize. And the board said nothing in the motion or attached evidence established a prima facie showing that the respondents will be subject to torture as that term is defined by the federal regulation. In fact, the motion simply says We believe that we are now eligible. And this court held in the case Awad v. Ashcroft that the board didn't abuse its discretion when it refused to accept that three vague sentences were sufficient to establish a prima facie case. In this case, there was one vague sentence that said, we believe we are now eligible. There was no mention of what torture is going on, why these petitioners would be subject to torture. There was no mention actually of torture except in the title of the motion to reopen. So clearly the board did not abuse its discretion in denying the motion based on another case of a motion to reopen. The petitioner still had to show they were prima facie eligible for this relief. They failed to do so. I believe the petitioner's counsel pointed out that the respondent made some claim regarding that the case has been pending, etc. There's actually a footnote in our brief, but we're not actually arguing that the court should dismiss this case because it's been pending for a while, etc. Simply a statement on the claim. What we are arguing is that the court should dismiss this petition for review because the petitioners are bringing the same claim back before the court that they brought before. They failed to show, one, changed circumstances, and two, that those changed circumstances now make them prima facie eligible for the relief that this court upheld the board's denial of in the first instance. So I'm having a hard time finding, I had a hard time finding in the brief, I'm having a hard time finding from the arguments made now, what exactly these changed circumstances were and how exactly these petitioners now eligible for relief. I guess if the court has no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And Ms. Fasciotti, you might have a few seconds left.
I've never stopped you, Your Honor.
The Begzatovsky and Vujic case, we believe, is very, very pertinent to this case. The business about the conflict goes beyond just civil strife. There's plenty of evidence in the file of the growing conflict between the president of Montenegro. The people of Montenegro didn't want their citizens to be drafted, but they had no choice. There was a resolution by the Montenegrin parliament that they shouldn't be drafted, and yet they still were. So the tension on this whole issue of military service was a political issue as far as the two governments were concerned, but it was also a human issue as far as my clients are concerned. In terms of the torture convention, there is the regulations that we cite in our brief, section 208.6C, that the board is free to take account of conditions in general. You don't have to show that you have been tortured in the past in order to qualify for torture in the future. In fact, it's almost a non sequitur, because if you've been tortured in the past, you'd hardly have the strength to make a claim that you might be tortured in the future. The fact is that general country conditions are extremely relevant, and it was in the board's wisdom as the...
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement.